Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast.
Our podcast.
God, it's episode one, and we're already screwing it up.
Sorry, you've had a whiskey.
All right. Well, let's retake. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast. My name is Mike Stojic, and with me is Joey Barber.
Hello.
And we're curious. We're a couple of bar owners during the middle of a pandemic.
Which means
we're not open. But we're sitting around, we drink, and we get curious, and we thought, you know, wouldn't it be fun, and it would give us something to do to start a podcast on our industry, and we'll call it Podcast
Bar Curious. So Mike's wasted, and he's gonna. I don't know if he's gonna get through these podcasts today.
Hold on, it's been a long time since I've done a podcast. So
I'm not even sure if this is gonna be edited out or not. Like this could just be this could be a really great first episode. This might be the one and only episode.
Man, oh man. So we thought take three. So we thought we'd start a podcast called Bar Curious, and you know, a little bit different than a lot of podcasts, especially industry type, that just talk surface level. We really wanted to dive in and really get after what some of the facts are and maybe make some of the facts up ourselves as we speculate through some of this. But you know,
self-factualized.
And go from there. So that's what you get. You get a couple bar owners during a pandemic with nothing better to do.
A lot of time.
A whole lot of time to do a little bit of research. In today's episode, we're talking about maybe your grandfather's bourbon.
I mean, I like some Evan Williams.
I know you
do. I'm not going to lie.
Well, listen, you shouldn't. And why would you? I mean, your bar.
That's a self-fact that I like Evan Williams.
It's a self-factualization of Joey Barber. So Joey Barber's bar... The Blind Barber is actually the number one selling Evan Williams
account in North Carolina.
North Carolina. You lead the state in Evan
Four
Williams.
4 years in a row. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, that is really crazy. Maybe because you're the only one selling it?
It might not be that crazy anymore. Yeah. You know what? I guess if I'm the only one pushing it, yeah.
Oh, that
I
was
guess.
Mean. That was terrible.
If there's four bars in North Carolina pushing Evan Williams single barrel.
Well, right now, like, nobody's selling it.
I guess I'm one of four.
But, you know, it leads us into, like, who the heck was this guy? I mean, we have all these bourbons with all these interesting names of all these old historic figures, and, you know, no one ever really talks about who these people were or what led them to... You know, it always goes back to, like, well, you know, he was this guy who did these things, and one of the things he did was make whiskey.
Kind of.
Well, yeah, a lot of times it's what you end up hearing from some of these stories. And so we thought, well, let's go a little bit further into...
Delve into his life.
Evan Williams was Mr. Williams. If you go to the Evan Williams website, it's got this photo of this dapper, very dashing, looks like an adventurer type, salt and pepper hair. I mean, if they had made a movie about his life... I would fully expect George Clooney to.
Dude, I was gonna. That was in my mind.
Were you really?
as you were describing him in my mind, I was gonna say George Clooney.
Yeah, and the more you learn about this guy, you're like,
he's definitely George Clooney.
Probably hilarious. Probably, as you'll see further, once we really talk about him, you're like, he's just a wild, fun, cool sounding guy, man. And imagine, I don't know, George Clooney sounds like.
I'd say he's probably a little wild, too.
Probably. But he looks... This is the first thing I thought of when I pulled up the Evan Williams website was, oh, shit. That's George Clooney, but in 17... late
it's probably someone's sketch of George Clooney in colonial period attire.
It's like, this is how we'll imagine Evan Williams would have looked. But yeah, so let's talk about the man. What do we know about him, Joey?
So Evan Williams, he was actually born in a little small village called Dale. On the western shores of Wales, born 1755, so sort of right when the U.S. was kind of getting started and taking shape. He immigrated over to the New World in the 1780s, so he was probably like mid-20s when he came over here.
Yeah.
And as soon as he got here, pretty much took over Kentucky.
Yeah.
In a pretty wild sense.
Yeah, pretty nuts. I mean, within just a few years, Evan was hardcore into business. He was a politician. And, of course, he was also making a lot of whiskey. at that time too. So
and controlled the ports of Louisville, and Kentucky. Controlled
the ports. The guy had a stranglehold on the industry, which, you know, that probably sounds bad, stranglehold. But he was doing
well.
He was making his way.
Yeah.
Making my way downtown. How's ever?
You imagine? Oh, God.
Imagine Evan coming down through Kentucky, the wild, the untamed Kentucky.
Just the arm swinging.
Making my way downtown. I don't know however that song goes.
You know a lot of it, it sounds like.
Well, it goes something like that. But so, right, he was a Welshman, comes over, immigrated to the U.S., settles in Kentucky of all places. And you would think during that time most folks would settle in New England because that's kind of where America,
right? Kind of where everything started. Was going. And he did. He
came
off.
Yeah. So he came into Philly, I think. Right. He came into Philly.
Yeah.
And then decided to go into Kentucky, and this is where it gets pretty interesting because he spent no time at all landing at this particular place, which would later become known as Louisville, but right on the Ohio River, which is where he started his distillery and started doing all of his business.
Yeah.
Right?
3 years after he got here.
3 years.
Which is insane.
Yeah. And if you really think about it, it's like, well, he didn't just hop on a plane and fly to Kentucky. It wasn't like a 4 or 5 hour flight. I mean, was a horse and carriage through like wilderness and
horse and carriage on a wooden boat to get across the ocean.
For a while. It's like the amount of time it would have taken him to get here. And then he's like, all right, here I am. And then within like, what, some short amount of time after that, he's the number one guy in what would later become known as Louisville.
Yeah, I mean, essentially within, 10 years, he had started a distillery, was the first master wharfman of Louisville, which essentially meant he controlled the ports. We can get into that also.
Yeah,
And then he was also elected to the City of Trustees. And this guy literally has 5 to 10 years experience in this new city, new state, not even a state at this point, and new country.
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, in 1797, elected Louisville's first wharfmaster, which is what you said. And if you don't know what a wharfmaster is, it's like a harbor master. And if you don't know what a harbor master is,
then let's go ahead and explain what harbor master is.
I'll tell you. So basically, there's a port somewhere, whether it be on a river or it be on a some sort of coast.
A body of water.
Wherever
ships can pull into.
Ships pull in, boats pull in, and at some point they offload, and then at some point they unload a bunch of stuff, and then they set sail to wherever they got to go. Well, the harbor master or the wharf master controls those things and ensures that the regulations are happening as they should.
Yeah, sort of supervises the whole outfit.
And then, one of those requirements was to ensure that the boats, when they docked, they only got 48 hours to offload and then onload before they're out of the way again. And that was one of his many duties as the wharf master. But it's remarkable that he was able to achieve that position with just a few years of being in Kentucky. Something else almost even more remarkable. Actually, I think the wharf master probably happened after the civic leadership position. He was one of Louisville's 7 elected city trustees, like you also mentioned.
The wharf master is 1797 is actually when he
was 1797. Elected. But yeah, so I mean, all within a few years. And then while he's doing these things, working with the city, I mean, the guy was a master stonemason and oversaw some of the building constructions within Louisville. The first jail.
Yeah, and the first jail and courthouse in the county.
Yeah.
That's insane. So he does that. He controls the boats coming in and out. He has a distillery. He's a city trustee. I mean, this is the most powerful guy.
He is.
On the East Coast.
Easily. Well, how do you just do that? It's almost as if the guy fell out of the sky, landed in what would later become Louisville in the state of Kentucky, and basically took over, you know, started making whiskey, jumped into politics.
Yeah, without knowing anyone. Well, we assume. I mean,
Well, yeah, there's not a lot of record on him. And then even what we'll find out later is there's even conflicting record that he wasn't the first distillery. So right now, if you go, what was the first distillery in Kentucky, you come up with Evan Williams. But then there's some other folks out there that I think, well, you know what, why don't we just talk about
Yeah, we can talk about now. This why, guy, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Like, whatever. This guy's calling out Evan.
Yeah, he is.
You're not the first. So
years after Evan's already passed.
Almost 100 years. Almost 100 years after Evan Williams passes away, a man by the name of Reuben T. Durrett, Duret. I'm assuming that's how you say it. Duret.
Yeah, that's probably pretty close.
Probably French.
Yeah, it's probably French. I mean, I would imagine.
Yeah, lived between the years of 1824 and 1913. Had a law degree. He was a huge history buff, and he was very interested in Kentucky. And he was one of the guys who just really wanted to dictate what was happening and create historical log for the state of Kentucky, so we would have that to look back on as our country grew. One of the things he did, he founded Louisville's first public library. He was the founder of the Filson Historical Society, which still exists today. And the whole purpose of the Filson Historical Society is to collect and preserve Kentucky history. He was known for having one of the largest private libraries. He had over 50,000 volumes in his home.
Oh, that's insane. I didn't know that.
50,000.
That's a lot of books.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
not only is it a lot of books, but it's a lot of books for 17, or the, not 17, but like late 1800s. Like,
that's
well,
true.
It's a lot always.
But yeah, that's a lot.
I don't know why everything seems
no matter
like,
what year you throw out, that's a lot of books.
Yeah. I mean, he just collected books. He was a huge historian. And he found a boarding pass. And what was the year? I can't seem to.
1794?
1794. So he finds a boarding pass from a journey from London to Philadelphia in 1794.
Yeah.
And he's saying Evan Williams cannot possibly be the first distiller in Kentucky because this boarding pass proves that he didn't exist.
Yeah, essentially claiming this one boarding pass he found was Evan Williams' inaugural crossing of the ocean. I mean, he essentially found his Greyhound bus ticket laying on the grounds and was like, oh, this must be the first time that Mr. Williams came on over here.
He came. Okay, so this might be a little bit confusing. So why don't we kind of recap these
gonna draw a timeline.
Let's draw.
Yeah, that'd be easier to understand. Because
we're trying to explain. From all accounts, for the majority of accounts, we see that Evan Williams came to America or to Kentucky in 1780.
Yeah, 1780s is essentially
he came to America and then into Kentucky.
Right, right.
And then it was in 1783 that he founded his distillery.
Yes.
Okay, and then it was in 1797. That he was
elected to the first wharf
master. Yep. So everything in between there is him building his Kentuckian empire.
Empire, essentially, yeah.
Practically,
exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw this or not, but I mean, Ruben saying that, you know, he didn't think that Evan Williams could have possibly been the first commercial distiller in Kentucky, but never really gives an idea of who he believes is the
no.
First, he just says, "Well, it's kind of difficult to tell who is."
Yeah, but it wasn't this guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know, but it sure as hell isn't Evan Williams.
And I'm thinking, man, what did Evan do to piss that guy off? To be
he took over Kentucky, apparently.
I guess, but if you look at it from other accounts, 1780 this 1783 starting the distillery. I mean, 3 years to start a distillery isn't unheard of, especially if that was one of the first things he did was, you know, get into the whiskey business,
right?
Which was kind of a big deal. I mean, some of the first things that we built, some of the first industries or the first institutions that we built as Americans were typically taverns or bars.
Yeah, I mean, that's where all the business happened, right?
It was. Everything happened there. Business, like when you settled somewhere, usually the tavern opened first because there's food and there's whiskey, and it was great for morale and beer.
You're welcome, guys.
Open us back up, damn it.
You're welcome.
So we can get off the mic and back to making drinks.
I'm back to business.
Something that we're actually good at. But, you know, that those institutions happen first, and then you'd get the courthouses and you get churches, and, you know, typically that's how it went. So it's not unheard of that he would start making whiskey and then get into other forms of business. And then obviously business, the higher you rise in business, you get pulled into politics. And then from politics, you're elected these different things. Why was
it's
he?
It's not unheard of. It's just.
No,
wow.
He did it pretty quickly. He did it within 10, 15 years. But, you know, it's also one of those things where, you know, he became the wharfmaster, and you're probably wondering, like, why the fuck would.
Yeah, what does that even matter?
Why would that matter? I mean, he's making whiskey. I mean, we get the civic stuff, like being in, you know,
making laws for your city.
Yeah. But if you really think about it, how do you think they transported whiskey in Kentucky? If it wasn't on horse-drawn
carriage.
Wasn't
on a truck.
And a lot of this whiskey from Kentucky was floated down the Ohio River into New Orleans. So that's where they were selling a lot of it. So of course he's going to be the warp master. Yeah, I mean, so
you're in charge of the docks. You're in charge of the river, essentially.
Yeah,
so.
He runs the freaking river. Yeah. It's kind of like mafioso stuff. Like this.
Oh, I'm sure
he would control the ports.
Oh yeah.
These are only my barrels are getting on the boats, and we're shipping it down to New Orleans.
I bet he was pretty strict about that 48 hours in and out too by the boats.
He was.
I got some barrels of whiskey here that need to get around. Yeah.
You guys' stuff we're going to put over there. It's going to wait a minute. Yeah. I don't know why he talks like that, but I'm going to make him talk like that.
It was George Clooney.
How does George Clooney sound?
I'm not even going to try that one.
Hey, we're going to put a whiskey over here.
Yeah, that's not it, though.
That's not it.
That's not it.
Oh, we're falling off the tracks. I think, you know, this is probably a good time to take a break. You want to take a break?
Hey, you need a break, Mike. Let's go ahead and give you a break.
Why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll talk about Evan Williams and his influences.
Yeah.
We'll see you soon.
Self-facts. Hey everyone, Joey Barber here from Bar Curious Podcast. I want to tell you a little bit about my bar in Raleigh, North Carolina. Not only do we specialize in craft cocktails, but we've also won Best Whiskey Bar in Raleigh 2 years in a row. One of the things that sets us apart from the rest is our expansive collection of vintage spirits. We have everything from bourbon, scotch, gin, Amaros, dating back from Prohibition all the way to the 1990s. If there's a unique pour that you're looking for that no one else has, this is your spot. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Blind Barber, or email us at contact@blindbarber.com. Join our email list to be updated on future tastings and private events. Hey, Mike, you know who I hold in high regard?
Who's that, Joey?
Mechanics and people who know how to work on cars.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Back when I was a combat engineer in the Marine Corps, I had the opportunity to be a platoon commander of the heavy equipment platoon. And I'll tell you, my guys could fix anything.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter how much knowledge you have if you don't have the right parts.
That's right. And that's why when you are working on a car, you need to check out my friends, the LKQ crew. They're the number one in auto collision repair industry for parts both body and mechanical. Check them out at lkqcorp.com for more info and all your auto repair needs. LKQ crew.
That's good.
Welcome back
to the Evan Williams Experience.
If you're still out there listening to us.
Oh, they changed.
They're like 15 minutes in. They're like,
they are gone.
These guys are wasted.
Yeah.
They don't know anything. We're back. And we're going to talk about some of his influences. But before we do, I think, you know, a couple things we didn't mention.
Yeah, a couple points.
Yeah. And to make even that timeline even more blurry than it already is, to really make, you know, to add to the controversy.
The confusion. Yeah.
Controversy, confusion, and conspiracy.
Ooh.
The three C's.
I like that.
We got three C's on our show. Does your show have three C's? I don't think so. Is that his license, his federal distilling license, was given to him in 1801. Or that's at least what the record shows. His 1801 federal distilling license indicated that he owned three whiskey stills. They were licensed at different gallons. That's how they did it. He had one that was 141 gallons, 130 gallons, and 93 gallons, which could lend itself to either story, Rubens or Heaven Hills, right?
Yeah, I would self-fact on this. I would probably say that it would be less towards Reuben, like as far as Evan Williams getting here right. In 1790s or whatever he said, because you know that wasn't when they gave him his distilling license. That's just what that year recorded him having as far as stills.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, I'm sure when he opened the distillery, he probably started with one, like most people.
Right.
And then by 1801, it's like, oh, now he has three.
Now he has three so, stills, or maybe yeah, a third I'm, still
I'm sure
came
that,
online.
I'm sure that took a couple of years to get to three.
For sure. I mean, it's regardless. I mean, the waters are muddy.
But anyway, yeah. Murky at best. Instead of us murkying them up a little bit more.
We're just going to continue to murky those murky Ohio waters.
The wharf master. Need another drink? Yeah. I'll pour something. I got
it. Get something.
I got you.
So on today's episode, we're fancy. We're drinking Weller 107.
Actually, I've not had any of that Weller yet.
You haven't?
No, you're just hoarding that bottle yourself.
I drank all that by myself.
Yeah.
Is that why I can't get
Mike, where do you think these dates are coming from? Dates are all over the place here.
That explains all of everything.
It does.
So we're bringing a fancy bottle and not at all sponsored by Weller or Buffalo Trace, but we thought, you know, it's what we're drinking. We'll let you know what you're drinking. Let us know what you're drinking as you listen to us.
They're probably drinking a lot listening to this. They're going to have to drink something.
Well, we need something to get through the mess of Mike and Joey. We should have just called it the Mike and Joey Hour and not put.
Hopefully, this doesn't last an hour. That's all.
Well, the thing too is like this should make you even more curious. I mean, I guess it lends itself to our name, Bar Curious Podcast. Because if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't know about these guys, maybe I should do some of my own self fact checking, self facts, self actualization,
self facts,
whatever,
self facts.
But it makes you more curious and do some reading and, learn a little bit. So, yeah, so that was it. So we get this federal license. We know of it with three stills, different gallon sizes, 141 to 130 to 93. Jesus. To 93. And then what else? Joey, we had something else.
Well, we're going to talk about his influence.
No, we had one more thing. The legend. As a city councilman, the most badass thing.
Oh yeah, he's definitely baller.
Along with being a wharf master and being all these things, the guy would show up
to the city council meetings with a bottle of his booze. I mean, that's how you get shit done.
That's literally. I mean, I wish our city council would.
Oh, yours and ours too. I mean. Yeah,
a lot more done.
Oh yeah, if there was a bottle of whiskey sitting on a table in Raleigh, then Jeez. I'm sure there'd be a lot more done right now.
Would, because we'd all drop our walls. We wouldn't be so defensive towards each other. Maybe the political boundaries would loosen up a little bit, and we'd all just enjoy camaraderie and
it's about helping people
and people helping people. Yeah. Right? So Evan was on to something. Might have been the smartest man in the room because he knew bringing a bottle would open, you know, make us.
Open some doors.
The lubricant that got us.
Don't ever say that anymore, Mike.
we greased the wheels, greasing the skids. But I also found things that he brought those bottles, and there was always like that one asshole who was like, Evan Williams, you shouldn't be bringing this bottle here. This is unprofessional. And he got cited a few times. However, and actually, I think he even got his bottle pulled. From him, he brought the bottle and was like, who's here
to
party? And yeah, he never said who's here to party, but he was like, hey, I got this booze, my own recipe. And then some guy's like,
there's always that one stickler in the room.
There's always one asshole who's like, you can't have that in here. And then they took his bottle, but by the time he got it back, it was like empty. Yeah. So it clearly made its way around the room under the table, except for the one angry old man who was like, you can't have that here. And you're like, screw you, old man. You don't tell me how to be. But anyway, is remarkable because it even plays to what I'm going to speculate is some of his past, this whole defy authority.
Which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of like,
very curious.
Freedom, liberty, live life, do cool shit mentality. So even though this old man in the city council meeting was like, you can't have that here. He's like, oh, okay. They still pass that around.
I mean, right.
There's accounts of it coming back to him empty. So, I mean, it goes back to like how he was brought up. And we know he came from Pembrokeshire.
Yeah, kind of like why is he in Kentucky?
Yeah, why is he in Kentucky and what made him the way he is and why does he look like George Clooney?
That's the main point of this whole show is why does Evan Williams look like George Clooney?
Wait, it should be why does George Clooney look like Evan Williams?
No, sir. I'm sure it's why does Evan Williams look like, because George Clooney's the man. I mean, you look like George Clooney. He doesn't look like anybody but himself.
He is a handsome fella. So, you know, kind of like what led him to this whole kind of a free spirit, I think. Well, you got to understand where he came from and where he grew up. And obviously, you know, we talked a little bit. He came from Dale. Dale was a small town in Pembrokeshire on the western part of Wales, which was one of the four kingdoms in the United Kingdom. There was England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales.
Right.
And then, you know, during that time from about the 1714 to about 1837, there was a period known as the Georgian era, or the Georgian Britain era.
Yeah,
I'm saying that. I'm trying to remember my.
Yeah, you're close enough. You have some whiskey.
trying to remember that history honors course I took in high school, and I'm like, I don't remember shit.
You walked in the wrong room, didn't you?
That was a long time ago.
Yeah,
it was a long, long time ago. So, So it was this era in Britain from 1714 to about 1830 to 1837. There's some, depending on who you ask. And it was named the Georgian era because of the different kings that existed at that time. We had King George the First, the Second, the Third, and the Fourth. And during that time, these kings led a great period of change across the United Kingdoms. Cities were growing, trade expanded, consumerism, pop culture, all those things really took off.
I mean, it was just a boom.
It was a huge boom. The birth of industrialization came about, but with that also came radicalism and repression, which really sucks. I mean, you have some of that stuff sounds cool, like, yeah, we're growing, consumerism, pop culture.
Yeah, the separation of classes.
But then, yeah, this radicalism and repression happened because you started getting, the wealthy got more wealthy and the poor got poorer, and it dissolved this middle class.
Seems like normal, doesn't it?
Yeah, we went through a time like that. Well,
I think we're still going through that, Mike.
And during that time, you ended up with extreme luxury, which lived alongside extreme poverty. There's this huge class division, and with that also came some crazy evangelical movement, which the evangelicals are Christians, but they're on the crazier side of Christian. I don't care. I'm going to say it. They are. They're crazy, man.
Crazier side.
I mean, there's a lot of sides to, you know, any religion, but
the adventure side.
They're not even adventure. They're crazy. So you have this evangelical movement. You have all this radicalism, which, well, no, that's part of the radicalism, was
right.
The evangelical movement.
Right.
You know, and Britain kept growing, and nobility and royalty. And I think at that time, too, there was that saying where the sun never sets on the British Empire, because they literally had colonies all over the world.
Right, just owned everything, essentially.
Owned friggin' everything. Yeah. And I think growing up during that time, Evan Williams, I don't think, because it doesn't really say this, but I'm speculating based on, I think we're both speculating based on what we know of him as this councilman, this wharfmaster, this distiller, this businessman, all these things that, okay, so he was definitely came from a family of wealth, but not of one of royalty or nobility. So one of those families that probably at the start of the Georgian era in Britain was probably a strong middle class, but wasn't like a duke or a
prince or something. Sure, if there was like, it wasn't more royalty. It was, very strong business savvy
business,
family.
Right.
Yeah.
Business savvy, understood the inner workings of stuff, and likely had, what's the word I'm looking for? Strong respect, or the utmost respect for the working class. I'm going to assume like he respected the working class.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume he didn't look down on people the way that he's.
He acted over in
Kentucky.
Because there's nothing bad written on him, and I don't think you can get into the business that you're in. Well, I guess you could. I mean, there's plenty of examples. Yeah, that's probably wrong to say. But I guess the reason I'm saying this is also in part due to the fact that he left.
Right. While all this is going on and this blowing up of, well, economically
I suppose if he wanted to stay, and if he came from a family of wealth, he probably would have stayed and continued to get wealthy.
Right.
Instead, he probably saw the disparity, thought this wasn't right, like a lot of people did, came to the New World looking for a better place,
and also saw opportunity in that,
and certainly saw opportunities. I'm not trying to make him out to be a saint, but
not at all.
You know, he didn't take advantage of people. He was like, you know what, this seems pretty fucked up, why don't I just come over here and find a new way, better way of being. And plus, coming from that wealth, and he obviously was educated, he understood how business worked, he understood how politics worked, Kentucky. He came in. He went to Kentucky, which was untamed. I mean, that was the Wild West of its time.
Yeah, we were
nothing
just
expanded
almost
past
just
Kentucky.
Starting to make our way through there.
Yeah, I mean, barely moving into Kentucky at that point. I mean, it didn't become a state until 1792. So he was in Kentucky prior to it being a state, when I think the territory of Kentucky made up like the majority of the center of, wasn't it like the majority of the center of the United States was this huge.
Yeah, essentially, Kentucky. It was just one land. Giant.
Yeah,
until and then they started divided. Separating stuff up. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and he landed there and he started doing business. But his infatuation with infatuation. Yes, he was infatuated
for sure
by both whiskey. I think was largely due in part to also England. They drank a lot there, and one of the things the poorer people drank was gin. Because it was cheap to manufacture, it was very easy to get. And if you do any Googling, and I think you should, because the pop art at that time, it would have been known as...
It's part amazing.
Of pop. It is amazing.
It's amazing.
It's part of that pop culture of the Georgian era, the mother gin era, where you have like gin being the bottom feeder spirit. So where all the royalty higher class were probably drinking Scotch whiskeys, right?
Yeah.
Would you agree?
I would agree with that.
Yeah, probably like Scotch whiskeys.
Yeah.
Brandies. No, they weren't drinking brandy because they hated the French.
Yeah, it wasn't brandy
for sure. No, no, no. Or at least cognac, I guess is what I was saying. But no, they weren't drinking. So probably whiskeys.
Yeah, probably just whiskeys.
Whiskeys, which was more difficult to make because it took time. They would typically age it for some amount of time. But gin was like very easy to make and it was very cheap and it was often the gutter stuff. So you get this mother gin era from the 1720s to about the 50s where everyone was drinking it because life sucked, you know, and they needed their escape from that reality. So they drank a lot of gin. And you'll find these, like, again, look it up on Google, the mother gin era, and look up some of the art. It's like these black and white photos, and you've probably already seen, not photos, but drawing illustrations of, like, women, you know, babies falling out of their arms, broken bottle, there's a horse doing weird shit, and her boob is falling out of her, or her corset or whatever. It's like just trashy-looking scene.
And what's funny about that, too, is we didn't talk about this before, and I'm not sure if you've even noticed this, Mike, but a lot of those drawings, it's just pure chaos in a street, you know, like the horse rearing
up,
you know, like you said, babies falling out of arms and stuff. But usually often to the side somewhere, there's like a small merchant where everything seems calm and collective. And that is essentially like a bar. I mean, like you can see bottles that he has on his tabletop and it's almost showing like, okay, here's the bar, and the merchant is all tame, and world around him is just chaos.
Everything going to shit. You know, gin was blamed for a lot of the social crisis. They thought that was the thing. And I thought you were actually, when you said that about the illustration, I thought you were going to go into Prohibition, because we had similar political cartoons.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, yeah.
Similar political cartoons in America just prior to Prohibition and even during Prohibition, where there was just chaos in the streets.
And that's a whole other podcast we'll get into.
We should.
That is a... That's for me, long. That is very
that might be
fun.
A two or three parter.
that's gonna be a very fun one.
Right, mothers like losing their babies and like weird. You know, it was always the mother too, which was strange. Like babies falling out of their arms. The gin cry. But they blame the gin instead of looking internally and saying, "Hey, maybe it's our policies. Maybe it's the fact that." You know
what's funny? They're still doing that.
I know.
They're blaming the bars and the gin over.
Oh, my God. They sure are. They're blaming the bars for all their problems right now. That's why we're still shut down after almost 6 months. Thanks. Thanks, Governor Cooper. thanks, politicians, for not...
Yeah, it's politicians in general. We're not taking a stance
pretty
on
much
either
all
side.
Of them. Well, yeah, no. You know what? Yeah, we shouldn't. We should say you all suck.
A good majority, at least.
A good majority. I'm sure there's a few good politicians.
There's a couple.
Yeah, none of them have backed up bars, though. Not heard a single one of them say, you know what? Bars are not the problem.
You know what's funny? I spoke to one senator
when
this thing kind of all started. And we were talking about to-go cocktails, and you know, I was saying, you know what, this would really help out bars and things right now. And his words to me was that was something that I was trying to push on the floor, but I had so much backlash from it, I had to take it out of the bill. So we had at least one that was on our side or trying
One. But we also had one that told you that in confidence, not one that publicly said, I get it, guys.
That's true. That's why I didn't say his name. So
thank you. Yeah. I'm going to take it as a genuine thing because I do know there are good ones out there. And then I know a lot are just filling their pockets.
Right.
So whatever. So, you know,
So back to Evan.
God damn.
Mr. Williams.
Back to Williams in the 1720s and 50s with the Mother Gin era. You know, so at some point he comes to America and he comes to America. But before that, you get the sense that, well, he grew up in this Georgian period where there was this class divide. He understood business. He must have come from some amount of money in order to make the trip worth his while.
Yeah, because, I mean, we're getting to that also because, I mean, there's obviously some people that didn't come from money or wealth that were able to come over here and try to start lives. But for him to come over in his mid-20s and just a couple years later start a distillery, that's...
Within a few years,
He knew he had connections or, you know, he had some family money.
He had to have. Not to discredit a guy. But
yeah, no, not right. at all. Like,
a lot
I mean,
of
this,
guys come with no money.
Right.
But it takes a long time to do it. And typically all they're doing is that one thing. And maybe later in life they get into the civic stuff, the elected official type stuff. This guy seems to show up, and within a few years, he's like, hey, I'm all these things now.
Yeah, he's like, I'm here. Here I am. Let's get this thing going.
He fell out of the sky, and you're like, yep, I'm a distillery guy. I'm doing all these businesses. I'm the wharf master.
Wharf master is just the coolest title ever. I'm not going to lie. That's just...
It is cool.
I wish we had a port around here.
There's the Neuse River. I should just set up my own little wharf, and I'll be like, I am the wharf master.
You know what we should do? We should just open a bar just called The Wharf, and then we'd just be the wharf masters.
We'll be the wharf masters of a bar that's not allowed to open.
That's the only way we could be a wharf master. We have to build it.
Oh, boy. I think it's time for another break.
I mean, might as well. Your glass is empty over there, Mike. So we.
Oh, my God. How many glasses is it? That's a lot of glasses. We'll be right back, everyone. Right.
Mike, what are you doing?
Not what?
You're eating all the pizza. Save some for the studio.
No, man, it's too good.
You're supposed to be driving right now.
Yeah, I can multitask, Joey. I can eat a slice of pizza and drive a car.
Mike, there's a pepperoni in your beard.
I regret nothing.
You guys want to try the best pizza in Raleigh? Head on over to Vic's Italian Restaurant downtown. Visit them at vicsitalianrestaurant.com and make sure you follow their pizza bus at Vic's Pizza Bus on social media.
So good. Hey guys, it's your old friend Mike here, and I want to tell you about my bar, Revival 1869. And though we may not be in Raleigh, it is just outside of it in a cute little town called Clayton. We're actually right on the historic Main Street. We focus on craft cocktails. In fact, so much so that we make our own cocktail syrup in-house. We also fresh squeeze all of our juices. I'm also proud to say we have nearly 300 different bottles of whiskey, and that's a lot of fun, especially if you're a whiskey drinker. We also started a YouTube channel. It's called the Revival Social Club. It's more cheeky and fun. We talk history, tell some stories, but most importantly, we teach you how to make your own favorite cocktails at home. So, you know, check that out if you want. You can see everything we have going on at revival1869.com. Check us out on Instagram and Facebook at revival1869. And if you're interested in some of our cocktail syrups, well, check those out at Revival Syrups. All right, so we're back.
Here we are.
And if you're still listening, then we know we got you.
You get a gold star if you're still here. I'm not going to lie.
Check plus.
We're going to have to buy you a pour or something if you're still listening to this.
Come see us sooner or later.
Did you forget the name of your bar?
No. I was going to say a time, and then I was like, none of us.
Well, don't give him a time.
None of us are up.
Just see us at some point.
Sooner or later. But so here we are. We're coming full circle. We talked about, you know, who he was. what he accomplished and all these things. And let's talk about, a little bit about where we're at now with Heaven Hill, but the Evan Williams Distillery, who is owned by Heaven Hill. So what you're drinking now is not what Evan Williams would have made when Evan Williams existed as a person.
Yeah, which is usually the case.
Which is,
I mean, the recipes and the mash bills change with time.
Sure. So, you know, you get this guy who seems, by all accounts, pretty awesome. I don't know. I think so.
I mean, I think so, yeah.
I mean, I'd
like adventurous and rebellious and wanting to take over Louisville, sounds like.
Yeah, and he did something pretty remarkable, and then it was kind of lost over time, and then a little bit later, it was contested by this other guy who ran this historical society. And now, even now, no one really knows the true story of Evan Williams. It's just one of those things where we all sort of accept him as the first commercial distiller in Kentucky. We just sort of accept it as fact.
Yeah, we don't have many other facts for someone else, so kind of take this one at, you know,
there really isn't anything else out there, so we'll
take Evan Williams at face value he was the first.
Seems good enough for us, so much so that he has a historical marker that sort of, you know, talks a little, basically says what we said, but in
about four sentences.
But in four sentences, yeah. We took a while
to get there.
We took an hour. The historical marker says it in four sentences. But if you're ever in Louisville, Kentucky, and you happen to be standing at the intersection of West Main Street and North 6th Street, you will see the Evan Williams historical marker presented by
Heaven Hill.
Heaven Hill Distillery.
Well, there you go.
It says it.
It's got to be true. If Heaven Hill put it there, you know it's got to be true.
That's my favorite part. Why? Leave it alone. It would be so much more credible if you didn't have this whole, like, presented by the Heaven Hill Distillery.
Like presented by Jim Beam or something like that.
No, just presented by the state of Kentucky. What's wrong with just... What's wrong with that? Or just don't present it. Just put it there as a historical marker and say, hey, the life and times of Evan Williams, 1755 to 1810.
I like that.
Presented by the Heaven Hill Distillery. You see what I mean? Anyway.
Well, speaking of Heaven Hill Distillery.
Look it up yourself. Let's talk about what Evan Williams is now, or Heaven Hill.
No, yeah.
Evan Williams, yeah. The brand.
Yeah, so the brand. So Heaven Hill actually has a storefront, a brick and mortar across the street from where Evan Williams Distillery actually was. And they call it the Evan Williams Experience. If you're ever in downtown Louisville, for sure go check it out. It's really cool. They have a little speakeasy bar back there.
Nice.
Yeah, it's kind of a quiet thing that they don't tell everybody about, but it's
they didn't tell me about it. So I'm
well, you have to know somebody, Mike.
Oh, I need to be.
Well, now you know me. Now I just told you
the number one seller of Evan Williams in the state.
Hey, you sell enough Evan Williams single barrel, and they just tell you some stuff. But anyway, it's a pretty cool thing. They've got like a little, like a presentation, like a PowerPoint. It's sort of like a little video.
Right?
A little
PowerPoint would be awful.
Yeah, it's not a PowerPoint. It's more of a little tourist video. Like, yeah, a little 10-minute tourist
little trailer,
video.
Little
yeah,
trailer yeah. for Evan Williams.
That's essentially what it is. So they have that. And they have
get George Clooney playing Evan Williams.
Actually, he is on. He's not. But if he was on there, that would be Williams absolutely amazing.
George Clooney's.
You know what? I'm going to talk to my people.
Talk to people,
the Heaven
man.
Hill
Let's
people.
Make this
talk to the George Clooney people.
Yeah, and if you're listening out there.
Hey, if George Clooney by chance is listening to this. You contact us, and we're going to get you to be the face of Evan Williams.
Got this idea. I'm going to throw the pitch. So what are we drinking now? I mean, Evan Williams has certainly changed. I mean, the mash bill is very different.
Yeah, so Heaven Hill picked up Evan Williams' brand in the 1950s, 1957 to be exact, is when they started the Evan Williams line of their bourbon. And they have a couple different... different selections in their line right now. The one that I really like is their bonded. It's the white label Evan Williams.
Yeah, 100 proof.
I mean, 100 proof, 4 years old. Like, it's $14 a bottle or something.
Yeah, it's hard
to
beat for
the
money.
You can't beat that. Not at all.
Well, their black label stuff, which is really their best-selling stuff.
Yeah, the black label is sort of their flagship for that line. That's their powerhouse.
Yeah, 5 to 6 years old, too.
Yeah. Right?
Isn't that what it is? Five, 6 years old.
Yep, 86 proof. So, I mean, that works well with anything. You can drink that neat. You can drink that in old fashioned. You can, I mean.
Go nuts, man.
Yeah, it's a good product. Yeah, and,
it's really fantastic.
And as far as sales, isn't that like the number, this second, number two?
Second largest selling brand, well, as of 2010. I mean, the data.
Shit, Mike, 2010. That's
I couldn't find anything more recent. If you,
man,
I don't know what it was. COVID, man.
Man, COVID's really done a number to you.
I was Googling and I was like, man, that's the best I can get is from 2010.
All right, but so as of 10 years ago,
second largest, probably this. Nothing's changed. I would bet. I don't know. Whatever. But second largest selling brand of Kentucky Straight Bourbon, William, right? Bourbon. Whiskey.
Bourbon whiskey, yeah.
Jeez Louise. Right behind Jim Beam.
Yeah.
Jim Beam, the largest, right behind him, Evan Williams.
That's not bad at all.
No, it's really fantastic. And a traditional mash bill. So I guess, you know, part of what Heaven Hill's doing here, even though in 1957 they revitalized the brand, you know, they're not using his original recipe.
Yeah, it's more of just the name.
It's probably, yeah, they take the name, they take the story. But at least they're paying homage to the man and his whiskey by creating a what we know now as a most bourbon connoisseurs know as a traditional mash bill, where you have this higher corn content, about 75% corn. They do 13% rye and 12% barley in their in that mash.
Yeah.
Which, you know, when you think, you know, types of mash bills, whether it's, you know, sometimes you'll hear the words wheated bourbon, traditional bourbon, or high rye bourbon, and it all has to do with what the, well, A, number one, what the flavoring grain is, and then the contents of that. So the rye to barley ratio. And if you're getting something around the 10, 12, 13% mark for rye,
yeah, like
and barley,
over 10% rye.
Yeah.
I guess it would be more of a high rye.
Well, I guess we have different.
Oh, are we differing in opinions right now?
I mean, I do. I say you for a high rye bourbon, I think you need to be close to 25%.
Well, you can't find me at 25% rye.
Rye bourbons?
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Let's pull it out. Let's do it, Mike. What
Basil Hayden?
One.
Bullet?
Okay.
Isn't Bell Mead high rye?
We're looking this up after the show, and then we're good.
I consider a high rye bourbon somewhere north of 20%.
Okay.
You gotta be in fact, whatever. I won't take it back. I said 25%. I consider it a high rye 25%. I think a traditional bourbon is somewhere, you know, the rye and barley is about the same. So you get about 10 to 12% rye, 10 to 12% barley, somewhere in there where they're only a couple points off. And then you get your higher rye bourbons, and I think you can get those closer to 18%. But I wouldn't consider an 18% rye content in a bourbon high rye. You would?
We're going to come back to that.
There's no rule.
There actually is not a rule
on what a high rye bourbon is. It's all on what you think. And I think for high rye bourbons, it's got to be somewhere in the mid-20s up to 30. Would you consider? Because you want that spice in the bowl. You know what? We're on a whole other subject. This is another podcast. We can look it up, but it doesn't matter. The point of the story was they made a traditional bourbon to pay homage to Evan Williams, who was, by all accounts, and is accepted by the bourbon community as the first commercial distiller in the state of Kentucky.
Yes.
We can agree on that.
That we can agree on.
Then let's end.
Let's end. Mike is like, let's just end this now while we still can.
Let's end on a happy note.
Hey, I'm happy.
Well, in a note where we both agree on something. So, if you like what you heard and you enjoyed our show, give us a like, give us a follow. We're going to put out episodes, I think, every week. We're doing weekly shows. We're diving into some of the history, some of the fun facts of the bar world. So it won't always be whiskey. In fact, the next couple episodes.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be cocktails and people and liquors and spirits.
Wine, beer, whatever. Oh, man. If it has to do with a bar, then we're curious about it.
Yeah, we have to be curious now. We do have to be curious about it.
Hence our name. Bar curious. So if you liked it, again, please like, subscribe, check us out on Instagram and Facebook. You can search for us there at Bar Curious Podcast. And if you want to contest us on something or just want to say
not necessarily
hi,
contest us, but if you'd like to,
but you can. But if you just want to say hi, You want to send some bourbon our way?
Or maybe you're curious about something that you'd like us to talk about in the future.
We will dig into it for you. You can reach us at barcuriouspodcast@gmail.com. That's a lot to say.
It is, but that's legit, though.
But it is legit. That You're not going to find a more legit gene. There
ain't. Not anywhere around here you won't.
Not a chance. But anyway, other than that, that's all I got. You got anything else there, Joey?
I think I'm good with the Evan Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was really good. That was solid, Mike.
If you're listening, Hollywood.
George Clooney.
George Clooney. George Clooney. Put him in the Evan Williams Experience. Dress him in 1780s colonial. I mean, we're going to get this done.
It's going to be a good time.
Yeah.
We'll see you soon.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.